Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I'm Brenda Barker, the TIPQC Executive Director. Today's discussion will feature Birdie Gunyon-Meyer. Birdie is the founder of the Perinatal Mood and Anxiety Disorders Program at Indiana University. She is certified in perinatal mental health and is an internationally known expert and speaker. She is a past president for Postpartum Support International, also known as PSI, and is currently the Director of Education and Training. Birdie led the development of the first international perinatal mental health professional certification. She's also the co-author of a book chapter for behavioral health services with high-risk infants and families. Birdie is a childbirth education and lactation counselor, as well as serves on her state MMR. She is soon to have a released documentary, More Than Blue, and is in PSI's video, Healthy Mom, Happy Family, Understanding Pregnancy and Postpartum Mood and Anxiety Disorders. Birdie has been speaking to audiences for over 28 years and is an international trainer for PSI's two-day perinatal mood disorders components of care and advanced psychotherapy one-day training. Birdie was also a speaker at our recent TIPQC annual meeting, and it's such a pleasure to talk with you again today. Thanks for joining us. Many of our listeners may remember your presentation from our annual meeting, and it is also now available online if they want to go back and listen to that or share it with their colleagues. But it was just so wonderful having you at our meeting, and really appreciate all the work that you're doing. And just tell us a little bit about your involvement with PSI.
Gosh, my involvement with PSI started all the way back to 2000 when I went to Walnut Creek, California to take PSI's two-day training. Because my hospital that I worked at for a million years, they came to me in 1997 and said, hey, do we have anything for postpartum depression? We've had three calls this week. And I was like, no, we don't. Because I did a lot of project management, setting up different things in the mother-baby area. And I said, let me look into it. I'm the OB nurse with a master's in counseling. So I looked around and listen, Brenda, these were the days, remember, we didn't have cell phones or we weren't using computers even a lot. And the URLs were big, long, whatever. I sent off in the mail, right, for information from Postpartum Support International and from other places. There was a place in Canada. There was another place that was doing a little bit of work with postpartum depression. And so I sent off for materials. And I found out a lot about Postpartum Support International. So think about this, how involved I am now. And my start was going to a training in 2000, meeting the founder, Jane Honickman of PSI. She said, oh, we need you in Indiana to be a volunteer coordinator. I didn't even know what that meant, but I said, okay. So I started out, I got training from them in basic perinatal mood disorders. I'm now the director over education and training, and I now redo the curriculum, and I'm in charge of all the curriculum and all of that for that training, and have 15, 20 trainers that do the training on my staff. So I started getting involved first as a volunteer coordinator for the state of Indiana. What that meant was when people would get a hold of PSI, and at the time, they'd get a hold of Jane, and they would say, I'm in Indiana, and I'm struggling. I think I have postpartum depression. Jane would then refer them to me, and my job was to collect resources in the state of Indiana where are the therapists? Where are the people who prescribe? And do they know perinatal mental health? Or are they just saying, sure, I know it, but they really don't? Have they had trainings? Where are the doulas? Where are the lactation people? Where are the different support groups? And so there was one hospital that had a support group, and then I started my own support group at my hospital. So then I started gathering these resources. There are volunteer coordinators in every state in the United States and in over 40 countries, still to this day. And what they do is collect resources. And then when someone gets a hold of PSI, either through the hotline or the helpline, or they send a message, either text or call, then they get, or through our app, we have an app called PSI Connect, and they're asking for help. They get sent back. They first get reassured, here's what's going on. You're not the only one. This is very common. Let me get you to resources. So I just want to tell all the listeners, and probably many of you right there in Tennessee, you have volunteer coordinators in the state of Tennessee. And so that's who they get connected to when they call and ask for help. So what's my history with PSI? You can hear it. I started in 2000, going to a training, got involved as a coordinator. I asked in 2004, why don't we do this two-day training all over the country? Because at the time, they only did that two-day training as the pre-conference, at the annual conference, and then one other time in California, because the home office at that point was Jane Honickman, and that meant Santa Barbara, California. And someone said to me, well, I don't know, Bertie, why don't you look into it? So me said, okay, I'll do that. So I got together a few subject matter experts and started revamping and looking at doing the two-day training that I took, but maybe let's look at doing it all over the country and getting a few more trainers. And so in 2004, I actually presented the first two-day training in Indianapolis, Indiana, as me as a trainer. I made myself a trainer. And I had been working then at that point with my own support group. I had set up my own program at the hospital and started growing that. And I had a helpline, and I'd let the OBs know and all of that. Well, then what happens? I get asked to be on the board of directors for PSI for the first chair of education and training. So I have that honor. And then 2 years later, I was president of PSI. And it's now called the chair of the board of directors, but it used to be called the president. But we've now grown so much, the whole organization, that now Wendy Davis, who was originally our executive director, is now called the president and CEO. So we have grown greatly since I first watched it all happen. And so now we do this training. I am still in charge. I worked at the hospital in a full-time job and worked with PSI and volunteered with PSI until 2018, when I finally retired from the hospital. And now I work full-time for Postpartum Support International. And it is my honor to work in this field.
That is a wonderful history, both of you and PSI. Yeah. And we are just so honored that you would join us. And we so appreciate your work getting this started. I know we've brought you to Tennessee probably, I think, 3 or 4 times we've had your training. And so great yes. history to know that's because of you. And we really, really appreciate that.
Yes.
Well, tell me a little bit. Let's jump into perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, or PMADs. Tell us what those are and kind of help us understand those.
Okay. So, you know, when you think about the founder of Postpartum Support International called it Postpartum Support International, we used to only call it postpartum depression. And to be honest, you can still call it postpartum depression. That's what the term that people know. People say postpartum depression. But when we call it postpartum depression, it kind of is saying that it's only depression and it's only in the postpartum period. But what we know and what research shows is that it can happen anytime in pregnancy or anytime in the first year postpartum. When I first came into this field, honestly, there were many people that only did training and they would say that there is postpartum depression and there's postpartum psychosis. They didn't differentiate. And so we had many, many women, partners, families wondering, well, what do I have? Because I'm not depressed. I'm not crying. And we would send people home from the hospital, and this is the only teaching they get. And sadly, some people are still doing this, but they would say, if you find yourself crying a lot, be sure and call your doctor. Well, what happens when they wake up feeling irritable, angry, rageful? What happens when they wake up anxious, jumping out of their skin, can't sleep, can't eat? Well, what do I have? That's not depression. And so I really think one of the landmark things that happened was Brooke Shields writing her book, Down Came the Rain. And it was, I think, either 2000 or 2001. So think, this is, I've now been in the field 3 or 4 years at that point. That book came out, and my clients, the women coming to my group and coming to see me for intakes, they said, oh my gosh, that book, that's me. What Brooke Shields had was anxiety. She had OCD and intrusive thoughts. And finally, she presented a picture of something other than postpartum depression. And women said, oh, I finally see myself. And also another landmark book at that point was Jean Watson Driscoll's book called Women's Moods. And honestly, for me, it was one of the first books that came out that explained and described OCD intrusive thoughts. And she put it in the book because she herself had it and had never heard anyone else mention it, that it was even part of perinatal mental health. So her book is all about your periods and then perimenopause, menopause, it's about pregnancy, postpartum, gives the whole thing, women and our hormones all throughout our entire reproductive cycle. So let me tell you what it does look like. When someone is Googling, they're going to Google postpartum depression, but it's not only depression. And people don't wake up and say, I think I've got postpartum depression. They wake up and say, something's not right. I haven't been myself since a baby was born. So here's what I teach in my childbirth ed classes, and here's what I encourage all of you to teach. Anytime you cross the path of a pregnant or postpartum person, you can do it, even though I talk a lot, you can do it very quickly in a short amount of time. You teach PSI's motto, and that is, you are not alone. This affects 1 in 5 to 7 women, 1 in 10 men. Did you know it was that common? That's what I like to emphasize first. 2, so you're not alone. You're not to blame. You didn't cause this. This is caused from risk factors. And we're going to go over that in a minute. 3.
That is so important to remember. Thank you for bringing that up. So
important.
And you cause this and you're not alone. Thank you.
You are not alone and you didn't cause this. It does not mean that you have a moral weakness or you're a bad mom or a bad dad. You really have to emphasize that. And then 3rd of our motto of PSI, you're not alone, you're not to blame. With the proper treatment, you will be well. That is giving hope because see, when they feel that bad, they think, now this is who I am. I'm going to be like this forever. I'm no use to my baby. I'm no good for my spouse. I'm no good for this family. And that's where your suicidal thoughts come in of they'd all be better off without me. And we really have to give that hope of you will get better. We just need to get you the proper help. So here's what I teach, Brenda. I teach, and everyone should teach this. Baby blues only last 2 weeks. Baby blues are caused from the hormone changes at the moment of delivery. When you are pregnant, your estrogen and progesterone are as high as they're ever going to be. When you deliver the baby, they crash down. Up come your good hormones, oxytocin, prolactin, not that those others aren't good hormones, but I'm just saying comes in, brings you in your milk, brings in your, I call it the mother hormone, the fall in love with your baby hormones. But those peak around 3 to 5 days where it's like, whoa, you got drop of hormones, you got increase of hormones. That's what causes the baby blues, where we cry easily, but overall mood is happiness. So that goes on for a couple of weeks, not saying you're not still adjusting to parenthood, because you are. So it's a big adjustment. But the baby blues are caused from hormone changes. Now, after 2 weeks and someone says, I'm still not myself, something else is going on. That's when we look at, this is a perinatal mood or anxiety disorder now after 2 weeks. So you're teaching, you're not alone, you're not to blame, and you will get better, but you're also teaching baby blues only last 2 weeks. People will think they had the baby blues for 6 months. They'll come to see me and say, I've still got the baby blues. And I have to let them know, you've got more than the baby blues, because baby blues last 2 weeks. So after 2 weeks, what are we looking at? We're looking at depression, anxiety, panic, OCD and intrusive thoughts, PTSD with childbirth, bipolar, and psychosis. So that's the many different faces, I say, of a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. So think, we've long talked about calling it postpartum depression, getting that picture of crying and sad, which is the picture of depression. And typically overeating junk food, sugar and chocolate, and oversleeping, and yet still tired. Suicidal thoughts, don't care about anything, blah. I don't have interest in the or joy or pleasure in my usual activities. But when we look at anxiety, what is the anxiety? Can't fall asleep, can't stay asleep, no appetite, losing weight rapidly, jumping out of my skin, anxious, worry. And with depression and anxiety, could also have as part of those symptoms, anger, irritability, rage. And those are things we don't talk about. And that's embarrassing, because they're screaming at their toddler, screaming at their spouse, screaming at their mom, screaming in traffic. That's a symptom that we just don't talk about. And they're embarrassed to come forward and say it. So we've got depression, we've got anxiety, we have OCD. OCD, what we think when we say, you're so OCD, we think of someone who's neat, has everything in order, but it is that. It's cleaning, checking, counting, ordering. We all do some of those kind of routines. But if you truly have a diagnosis of obsessive compulsive disorder, it's more than that. It is debilitating. It gets in the way of your day. You really have to clean, clean, clean. You have to wash the baby's clothes 3 times, the same load 3 times, because they weren't clean enough the first time. You're worrying about contamination and you're worried about people. We don't like people touching our baby anyway. Don't touch someone's baby without asking. But we worry that if someone does touch their baby, someone with OCD would say, I need to get away from them. I need to wash my baby down. I need to wash their clothes. They just contaminated my baby. They have to do routines in a certain way. So cleaning, checking, counting, ordering. They can't let you help them with their laundry because you don't fold their towels right. So they have to do everything themselves. And after a baby's born, this is just exhausting, totally exhausting. So I've seen people who have to change the baby's diaper every 45 minutes because they can't stand the thought of seeing their babies behind. You know, they just worry they're going to be dirty. They'll wash their hands over and over until their hands are bleeding and cracked because they're not clean enough. So that's kind of that picture we have of what really OCD is, but it also can be, along with OCD, what we call intrusive thoughts. And those are the misunderstood of all these diagnoses and gets misdiagnosed. And that is where the place in your brain that wants to protect your baby is taken and twisted and said, what is the worst that could happen? And then we have this thought of what if. So it's the what if, okay? What if my baby starts breathing? What if someone breaks in my house and steals my baby? What if I drop my baby? What if, what if, what if? And these are very horrific images, pictures, thoughts, stories that go through their head. So not only what if I drop my baby, but they might see an image of themselves falling down the stairs with the baby. Or they might see an image of many things. So common images and triggers are sharp objects, heights like stairs and banisters, water, driving across a bridge, giving the baby a bath, traffic. Now you got a baby in the back seat facing backwards and tailgaters coming up like they always do. And now suddenly that baby's back there. Oh my gosh, what if someone hits me? What if I'm in an accident? And so all these what if, you never thought about these things before you had a baby. People that have OCD typically already had it. 99% already had it. Now it's ramped up and different. Same with anxiety. But now the worries are different because they're about a baby. So now OCD and OCD and intrusive thoughts ramped up. And if they've had intrusive thoughts in the past, okay, it bothered them. But now it's about a baby and harm coming to baby and maybe them doing harm. So I always give the example. Here's an example of an intrusive thought. You're driving down the highway. You're behind one of those trucks with the cars chained up on it. What's going to happen? Yep. Every one of those cars is coming off and they're going to hit you head on. Okay. That's an intrusive thought. You think about it. You imagine it. You tell a story about it. So we've got depression, anxiety. We've got beyond anxiety could be panic attacks. And so that's just even beyond anxiety. And once you have a panic attack, you panic about having another panic attack. And they end up in an emergency room thinking they're having a heart attack, and it's panic. Then we have OCD and intrusive thoughts. And then we have PTSD. PTSD is something didn't go right at delivery. So some of the numbers, stats that we have is one in two women are now saying that something traumatic happened at their birth. And it could just be, I came in, and of course, we all dream of our beautiful delivery. And some people end up with a C-section. Some people end up in premature labor. Some people end up with maybe baby has something wrong with them that maybe they didn't know before they delivered, or something happens at delivery, such as, I'm a nurse, so meconium stained fluid. And oh my gosh, now we got to worry about that. And is the baby going to be okay? And that's where baby has poop before they're born. They have their first stool. And so all these things could happen. It could be baby gets stuck. It could be that you don't progress. It could be that you have a postpartum hemorrhage. Could be baby goes to NICU for breathing issues. All these things that when we do our birth plans before we deliver, I tell people in my prenatal classes, call it birth preferences, because things may not go as planned, but we're still disappointed. But if they end up with an emergency C-section where you think you're going to die, your baby's going to die. So what happens after a traumatic delivery? And it can be so bad as someone almost dying, someone going into an intensive care, not even remembering the first few days. So it can be all kinds of things. And what happens is many people then have anxiety attacks with flashbacks. And they really need therapy because they need to work through that traumatic birth. And if they don't, then every time the baby's birthday comes around, they relive that traumatic birth and they have panic attacks and anxiety attacks. So we did depression, anxiety, panic, OCD, PTSD in childbirth. And then some people might already have bipolar disorder, which predisposes them to having psychosis. They're just at higher risk. But also some people are diagnosed with bipolar disorder for the first time postpartum. Either way, people with bipolar disorder should be followed all throughout pregnancy and the first year postpartum by a psychiatric care provider, either a psychiatrist or a psych nurse practitioner, someone trained in perinatal psychiatry medications that knows how to prescribe. Because most, I would tell you, would say that people with bipolar disorder or a history of psychosis should stay on medications throughout pregnancy, because you're going to have relapses with not good outcomes, really. But what happens? 50% of pregnancies are unplanned. We don't always get a plan ahead of time. Suddenly they find out they're pregnant and they go off all their meds, or their mom tells them to go off their meds, or their OB tells them to go off their meds. And it can be a really bad outcome. So anyway, there's that. And then psychosis. Okay, so 1 in 5 to 7 women get a perinatal anxiety or depression and all the things we just talked. PTSD is more of, we have different statistics for that, a few different with OCD. But some people can have anxiety, depression, OCD, and PTSD all in the same person. But now we're going to talk about psychosis. Psychosis is 1 to 2 in 1,000. So less common than depression and anxiety disorders that I just talked about. But don't call it rare. It still happens. 1 to 2 in 1,000 is the amount of people that get a blood clot in their leg. And we watch for that, don't we? We want to watch for psychosis. What are the risk factors for that? Someone who had a family history or personal history of psychosis, history of psychosis, or someone who has a personal or family history of bipolar. Or the other way that psychosis can happen is with someone who doesn't sleep. So you go without, you, any of you, go without sleep for 3 to 4 days, you can also have psychosis because you can't go without sleep. So we have to protect sleep. And sometimes I've seen clients that had postpartum OCD and intrusive thoughts, and they're not sleeping, or anxiety, they're not sleeping. And they go 3-4 days and nobody realizes they're not sleeping. They go into a state of psychosis. So it doesn't mean that depression or anxiety or OCD eventually goes into psychosis. That's not what happens. What happens is sleep doesn't happen. And then you can have psychosis because of sleep deprivation. But many of our psychosis situations are because of a previous history, family or personal, of psychosis or of bipolar disorder. And so we want to watch for that. And again, with that history, we should be following them all the way through pregnancy and postpartum.
That is such a fabulous overview of the perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. Yeah. I just think we probably need to have you on a second podcast to, we heard some fabulous information and I think we need to process that just a little bit and think more about risk factors and screening and how our obstetric colleagues can support our moms and dads as well. So thank you again for that really fabulous overview. And if you're okay with it, we're going to have you back and tell us more of how we can support our moms and dads.
Sure. Do you want to talk about what the risk factors are real fast?
Absolutely. You want to jump into those? That would be great.
Sure. Let's name just because. Remember when we talked about you're not alone, you're not to blame, and with treatment you will be well? Well, the not to blame is what we really have to get across. And when I teach classes, and still I teach a fourth trimester class that any you can send any of your patients to, your pregnant patients can come to my fourth trimester class, and PSI teaches a planning for pregnancy class. They're both free, and we can do it. But what we teach in class is, here's who gets a perinatal mood disorder. 1 in 5 to 7 women, 1 in 10 men. Who gets it? Those who have these risk factors. These are evidence-based risk factors. And this is what people don't know. If you have diabetes, risk factor, thyroid imbalance, history of thyroid imbalance, risk factor, fertility challenges, infertility, fertility medications, risk factor, other endocrine disorders such as polycystic ovarian syndrome, you were a moody teenager, you have really bad PMS, or they sometimes call it PMDD. You react to hormonal birth control, so you're really hormonally affected. Abruptly discontinuing breastfeeding can crash down good hormones. Now, some people have breastfeeding difficulties. Once you get help them with their breastfeeding, you resolve the breastfeeding issue, they're not crying all the time anymore, and it's not really postpartum depression or anxiety. But abruptly stopping breastfeeding will cause good hormones to crash down, and sometimes people have an increase then in depression and anxiety. Lack of sleep, which I've already mentioned, we have to protect sleep. It runs in families. So your mom had it, your sister had it. It's very interesting. And then your relationship with your own mother is a risk factor. Let's say your mom passed away. Your mom lives in another country. Your mom abandoned you, neglected you, abused you. You and your mom haven't spoken in 5 years. You and your mom do talk, but you argue all the time. Your relationship with your mother comes out when you have a baby. History of any trauma, and just keep in mind, 1 in 3 women have been sexually abused. That's a history of trauma. Physical abuse, emotional abuse. Many people who come to see you are going to have a history of trauma. Poor social support, nobody to help. Institutional structural racism. Family or personal history of perinatal mood disorders or any of the things I just discussed, depression, anxiety, OCD, PTSD, bipolar, psychosis. All, if you have a personal or family history of those, that's a risk factor. And honestly, we all have a history of something, some more than others. Nobody has a clean history, but some people are much more affected. Eating disorder, substance use disorder. Those are all risk factors. History of, like I said, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, long-lasting effects of the childhood sexual abuse. Other risk factors, interpersonal violence or not having social support, other relationship stressors that are going on, financial stressors, childcare stressors, recent loss or move, barriers to care, seasonal affective disorder, complications during pregnancy, birth, or breastfeeding. So think about just anything that complications with those. Health challenges for both baby or for parents. Think about having a baby with a lot of health challenges, big risk factor. Baby goes to the NICU, risk factor. So think about risk factors as a way of, gosh, you didn't cause this. You didn't have a choice. These things happen. The temperament of their baby, a baby that screams all the time, guarantee you, not a good situation. Returning to work outside the home after having a baby, now you come home and start your second shift. Unresolved grief or previous losses. So think about you had a previous miscarriage, previous abortion, previous termination for medical reasons. It's somebody who's had a loss. Let's say they had a miscarriage. They're going to be anxious in the next pregnancy. 2 miscarriages, beyond anxious. So we have to think of those previous losses. And so that's just a few, Brenda. We also, multiples, you have, you're in a military, you have twins or triplets. Just think about it. It just keeps going. That's some of those risk factors that you can really throw in there. And did you get a choice? No, you didn't. We have to take that blame away. You didn't cause this. These are, and people are always shocked. And I want them to hear when I teach classes, I teach those risk factors. And then I want them to say to themselves, wow, I have a lot of those risk factors. I should watch for this.
Absolutely. Well, and I really appreciate that you're not alone. You're not to blame and you will get better. Well, Bertie, we have dive into perinatal mental health and anxiety disorders. We really want to have you back for a second episode or how our providers can support our moms and dads.
Great. I'd love to come back because you know we have lots more to talk about. We got to talk about resources. We've got to talk about all of it.
Absolutely. And again, I appreciate you joining us today and I appreciate our listeners as well. And look forward to a part 2 coming out soon. Thanks again, Bertie.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.